I'll start with the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help each other to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Declaration of Unity Statement. This we owe to AA's future, to place our common welfare first, to keep our fellowship united, for on AA unity depend our lives and the lives of those to come. Now I'll read the Tradition 11 in the long form. Our relations with the general public should be characterised by personal anonymity. We think AA ought to avoid sensational advertising. Our names and pictures as AA members ought not to be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. Our public relations should be guided by the principle of attraction rather than promotion. There is never need to praise ourselves. We feel it better to let our friends recommend us. So we have two speakers now. We have Sean and Rob, and Rob is going to go first. So I'm going to hand the meeting over to Rob for the next 20 minutes or so. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Amanda, for organising this and asking me. And hi to my fellow group member, Sean, there. My name is Rob. I'm an alcoholic. And delighted to do my best to give my experience of Tradition 11, I guess, as it pertains to me and throughout my experience as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Just a very brief background about myself. My sobriety date is June 20th, 2001, is when I walked into my first meeting in London. And because of the steps and traditions, I haven't had a drink since that date. Now, that's a broad statement, and then there's a lot to it. And if there is anyone new here tonight, that's fantastic and welcome. There's a lot in that, but it really it is the steps and traditions, and within that is the foundation of my sobriety. And we could probably talk for hours and hours on different aspects than that, but tonight we're just going to focus on one tradition. This is the second talk I've given in the last few weeks on the traditions. Amanda was kindly to ask me, and the last one we did was Tradition 6. And what it's done, particularly that first time, is made me go back to research it. No one wants to, if you get asked to do something, you want to give your best possible performance, or you want to do your best in doing that. And so there's preparation involved. And what it did, particularly for that first tradition and for this one as well, was, I don't want to come here at 7 o'clock on a Sunday night and not have anything to say. And that information that I've kind of found and the research I've done was in there. I was very, very lucky that very early on in my sobriety, I was encouraged to thoroughly go through the literature. And I don't think, I might be wrong, but I don't think there's a piece of AA-approved literature that I haven't, read over the years. And most of that, 90% of that, was probably done in my first 2 years, where I had a great thirst and gratitude for what was happening to me. And a strong sponsor that really encouraged me to go back through the literature. And within that literature for me is the foundation of the traditions, the birth of traditions. It's all there if you look through various books. I should just say, I'll go back a bit. Sean, this is the last time I do this one as well. Sean partnered up with me, and Sean, being Sean with the type of guy he is, just said, Rob, would you like to, how do you want to do it? And we're actually going to split this into just two different perspectives, I guess. And I'm going to approach it from the angle of the groups, which I did last time. And probably the harder part of this, or I think it's the harder part, is how we, how we bring these traditions into our lives personally. And Sean's going to focus on that. So that's just a little roadmap of what we're doing. So what it's done is forced me to go back into the literature and source information of how these traditions come about, which has been fantastic, because in doing that, there's a whole bunch of stuff that I'd forgotten about that just makes you so grateful and so kind of in awe of how this whole fellowship came about. It really does. And that's certainly been the case with me. It wasn't, you know, this afternoon I had my head back in the books and sourcing it. And I guess the first thing to say with the origin of traditions is they are there to, they were born out of this new fellowship that everything was new. You know, you have to go back to the 30s and I guess into the 40s when the traditions came about. And, you know, each year, each month also, the fellowship was just changing so rapidly. And each problem that they had within groups, and it was all centered through the New York office, this correspondence, obviously just mail back then, there was no email or you know, I think even probably telephone calls were limited. It was all through mail, which was the main, form of communication. And all these groups in different parts of the country, as the groups were mushrooming everywhere, would send in to Bill, who was the leader of AA. He was the founder with Bob, but Bill was very much in that New York office. Bob was, you know, but Bob seemed to me, it's very much from a spiritual point of view and a guidance to Bill behind it and just wisdom. And it's kind of hard to pinpoint, but Bill was the first himself to say it just wouldn't have happened without Bob. I mean, obviously the meeting together, but it definitely with regards to traditions, they were written by Bill. They were written by Bill and put together by Bill, but they were Bill put them together on the basis of all this correspondence that he got, him and his team, I guess, got in the New York office, and they were problems. They were, you know, there were scenarios. There were real issues that were happening within the groups, and you know, he would say with grace and with the group conscience even back then as the guide. They began to kind of forge the best way forward for the fellowship. But, you know, with AA, it's not as if they could look to business or even, you know, other fellowships. We were just so unique. It, you know, at the end of the day, we're a bunch of drunks. It's, you know, yes, there's the Washingtonians, which they drew heavily from the problems there. And there's definitely other organizations that they looked at that helped them. But at the end of the day, we're a bunch of drunks that had never been done before. And we work on a spiritual basis. There's no, you know, there's no science involved. There's no, it, you know, it's almost incomprehensible how we are here and how the fellowship is as strong as ever. So this is how the traditions were born. And tradition 11 was, you know, ironically broken, you know, the question of anonymity was actually broken most of all, ironically, by Bill himself to start with. He was a hero to drunks in the States and in New York in like the boom years of AA in the 40s and 50s. He was like a film star in AA terms. Everybody wanted him to speak at the meeting. Different organizations, medical organizations outside of AA wanted him to you know, consult and to front. He was in demand. He was really in demand. And when he went to speak at a meeting, he was mobbed. You know, and this isn't from him, but this is outside observers saying this is what it was like. And of course, Bill was unknown going to these meetings and doing it and saying, you know, my name's Bill Wilson, and he was right out there who I am, what he'd been, and it was there, and that was his, you know, that was his MO without any thought of the possible dangers of that. And what happened, what happened to change that was, first of all, was what, you know, what the literature terms the first anonymity breaker. And I guess it was, it was a guy called Rolly H, I think his name was, and he was a very, very famous baseball player at the time. Baseball in America back then was the sport. It was the NRL in Sydney. It was the AFL in Melbourne. It was everything. And these guys were, you know, were huge stars. And it came about that Rolly, he broke his anonymity. He was a known drunk. I think he was called Rollicking Rolly. Yeah, he was a pisshead. That was what he was. But and his career had gone down the swanny, and he was, you know, and he sobered up. And he sobered up through AA. And then his, you know, his performance went up, and he told everyone about it. And he wasn't doing anything wrong. He was, you know, quite the opposite. He was full of gratitude, like we've all been. In fact, we com- Well, I do anyway. I know how Rolly felt. You know, when I sobered up, you know, I was to family, to, you know, to, you just want to tell the world you're back. And that's how Rolly was. And I can't tell from the literature that it probably needs better historians than me whether he busted or anything. It doesn't, in what I've read, the problem was that he wasn't busted or anything like that. It just made Bill think. And it just, you know, as these things do with us, that the perspective shifted. And so Rolly H was the first one that, and Bill began to thought, and, you know, for me, tradition 11 is very closely, obviously, because the word anonymity is in both, it is with the tradition 11. It was the humility, and Bill began to realize that what we are, all of us as drunks, but a lot of us are drunks, so we are these power people. We do have this craving for the limelight. Not all, but some do. And left unchecked, it is dangerous both personally and to the fellowship as well. So I don't think Rowley actually busted. He may have down the track, but it's not pinpointed. But Bill began to see the possibility that he could bust and the consequences from that. And traditional 11 there was, if Rowley busted, I mean, the equivalent today, this guy was a superstar, then the knock-on effect that they would have for AA. And then even more so, that I think Bill found harder to kind of process and deal with was one of the earliest founders of AA, and the first female AA that I can understand was a lady called Marty, who just seems like an incredible lady that got sober. And again, now her motivations were she wanted to go out and get into the world of medicine and science and promote AA and promote sobriety, and particularly with women, and she just had such good intentions, and she had an engine. Like, this woman was, you know, apparently she was kind of very she was very attractive, she was very appealing in what she spoke, she was just, you know, she just caught the limelight, and she wanted to devote herself, I think, professionally and personally to forward in the movement of recovery in alcohol. But she was an AA member, but she wanted to do it through different fellowships and organizations as well. And she did. I mean, she absolutely did. But she tied her fellowship to AA. You know, again, that's touching on other traditions about, but with herself, she was the face. She was absolutely the face of the fellowship. And Bill really, you know, he was extremely close with this lady, and him and Bob had actually put their own names to her causes as well. They'd kind of underwritten it to a certain extent. So again, not that she was, and I don't think there's any evidence that she busted, but Bill's thinking was accelerated further in the fact that what could happen if, you know, at the end of the day, where Bill, I think Bill was so clever, he was understanding the frailty of human natures. We can all bust. I could go and pick up a drink tonight. We all can. And but the fellowship needs to stay the same. So Marty back then and Rowley H's busting shouldn't the danger shouldn't jeopardize the success, the strength, the overall impression of AA to everyone else because one person went. Because the truth was, the fellowship, if one person goes, the fellowship still, you know, ultimately strong. That's the case today, and that's the case back then. So everything I'm talking about now, this is pre the traditions. It's just interesting to me to see how Bill must have thought of these things. Now, the other thing, the other example back then that I found, which is, you know, concerning Bill himself, and I guess this must have really been you know, incredibly difficult for Bill to do. If anyone even today that speaks to Bill W, and if you look back at Bill W, and if you listen to recordings of old members that come into contact with BW, that there is a common a common observance that he wasn't a showy man. You know, he did like the limelight, and he was when he was drinking and not drinking, he was a strong character, you know, let's put it like that. And like all of us, he liked attention, and we all like praise. And Yale University, which is, I probably like the top 3, 4, 5 universities in the world, Yale, Harvard, Oxford, Cambridge, you know, this preeminent university in America looked at the fellowship and looked at what Bill was driving through AA and got in touch with him and just, you know, basically wrote to him and said, this fellowship that you're spearheading is amazing. It's working. It's new. It's outside of medicine, but it's inside. It's outside of religion, but it, you know, and they wanted to honor him. They wanted to give him an honors degree, a Yale degree, which, you know, happens even today. You know, I think like Obama and people like that will get them, and you know, I guess deservedly so for other work. And this is exactly what Bill was offered in the 40s, you know, Yale wanted to honor him with one of their degrees. And, you know, his first reaction was, and he writes about it himself, absolutely, I'll, you know, this would be the pinnacle of, you know, I never went to university, you know, and he was so excited about it. The humility of him as he writes about it, he's quite honest about it. And of course, you know, then, you know, he thought and he pondered and again, with traditional 11 in mind, that it really would with him, you know, he's putting that prestige, that personality before the principles, and that's the key. And this is where all this came from. So we're landed with what's forged out of these examples and you know, countless others as well. It is this tradition that came in that we placed, and from that, you know, and you know, we remain anonymous. At the level of TV, radio, and films. And for me, this is crucial. I don't want to step on in Sean's area because this, just bringing it to the modern day myself, that it is specific in what it says. Now, I remember back when I came in, there's only one treatment center in London back then, and it was for the rich and famous. It really was for the rich and famous. And in my, and you know, I could give you 20 names that was common knowledge that went through that treatment center. It's called the Priory. That's what it was called. Very, very extremely famous people, film stars, movie stars, pop stars going through it. And I know the name, you know, 5 or 6 were in there, front page of the paper, and then joined the, and it was, to their credit, there was AA meetings in their time, and they came out and I saw these people in meetings, you know, in my early sobriety, they'd be in the same groups and extremely fun. And 5 or 6 of them busted spectacularly. And they had gone everywhere, you know, in the papers for the right reasons. It must be stressed, just, you know, in January espousing, you know, what AA had done to them. And then in June, they were, you know, photographed by the paparazzi staggering out of the, you know, the latest nightclub. And I remember even to myself in those early days, just like the disappointment and the, not in the person, but just the fear it put inside me that, well, if they can go, I can go. And it was, you know, now I had an inside view, but for those not in AA that saw it, that's where the danger and the genius of Bill is, in those early people, your rollies, your mind, this is what he saw. But it is crucial for me that it's at the level of press, radio, and film. So for me, if Sean said to me now, put my phone number and my full name and maybe not my address, that's maybe a bit more, but I have no qualms about that whatsoever. I'm not famous, I'm not big, if Rob drinks, I'm not going to bring down the fellowship at all. No one knows me. So if someone in a meeting asks my number or my full name, I've got no qualms about it at all. If I go into QR someone, or it doesn't bother me. This is just for me. It's not, I think, I feel sometimes people take the tradition in the wrong angle to extremes, and I totally get it, that's up to them. We're not an anonymous fellowship within ourselves. How can we be? We need to be there to, yeah. So that's my view on that. But hopefully there, you know, that's just given a, you know, somewhat of an insight into how this tradition, how it was formed, where it came from. I got most of this. I did this in the last tradition talk I gave, because it's such a good book and they're all in there. If anyone's interested and they want to know more, and that every tradition, that it's AA, it's called Pass It On, which is one of the, you know, it's just such a rich book that gives the history of AA, the traditions of Bill, and that's where I've sourced this from. So I think that's about it. Can't wait to hear Sean. Thank you again, Amanda. Thank you, Bob, for taking the meeting.
Thanks. Thanks, Rob, for your share. Now I'll read the tradition 11 in the long form. Our relations with the general public should be characterised by personal anonymity. We think AA ought to avoid sensational advertising. Our names and pictures as AA members ought not to be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. Our public relations should be guided by the principle of attraction rather than promotion. There is never need to praise ourselves. We feel it better to let our friends recommend us. Okay, so I hand the meeting now over to Sean.
Thanks, Bob. It's good to be here. I'm Sean, I'm alcoholic. I love listening to Rob. I love listening to Rob share and Amanda and Bob. Thanks for inviting me. I'm very grateful to be here tonight. I've only known Rob for a couple of years, but I don't know. It makes me feel happy every time I see him. I don't know. It makes me feel good. It's this amazing fellowship that we have, you know, just to stick together and be with each other. And as my sponsor says, keep dancing the dance, you know, just keep going one day at a time, keep making your way through. I'm grateful to be asked to bang on again tonight about the traditions. Bang on. I really enjoyed last time coming to share on tradition 6, and I certainly got a lot out of the experience of spending some time just looking at it from a personal perspective. And, you know, I can't help but start by saying that, you know, that the process of me getting sober has been a journey, and continues to be a journey of from self to self-forgetting, or selfishness and self-centeredness, and only thinking about me, and to a place of thinking about others. And that is intrinsically part of the steps, and it's also a very big part of the traditions. And I think if we, you know, put the traditions in our life, we can, I think really grow. And, you know, I the oldest sober member in our group is probably about 20 years sober. And it's interesting because, you know, they've seen a certain amount of things, but then the people that sponsor them are, you know, got even more time up, and they've been sober for like 35, 40 years. And so they see all this stuff that comes into these rooms and all the ups and downs that people go through, you know, living life on its terms. And I think the beauty of having a spiritual program to put into your life is that you can weather the storms as they come and go. And certainly I'm seeing, you know, the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, this miracle being passed from one person to the next. And it is truly a beautiful thing to be a part of. And, you know, it's something that I really value in my life, and I really try and, you know, do as best as I can with what I've got. Tradition 11, as Rob, you know, really clearly outlined, is this idea of attraction rather than promotion, and personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And I think that incorporates the idea of social media. Can you imagine how quickly AA would be cancelled if we were allowed to talk about what we did on social media? Like, it would be AA cancelled, gone, over. I mean, everyone's getting cancelled, and I think AA would be first off the chopping block, because what a crazy bunch of people we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. If we were just talking about how we were members, we would jeopardize the whole fellowship. You know, we really would. And so it's. I think it sounds like from what Rob was saying, that this was a hard fought wisdom. You know, this wisdom was something they really had to work out and nut out together. And I think that's like all the traditions, this idea of remaining anonymous at a public level. And, you know, I think there's an important spiritual foundation in anonymity, which is tradition 12 as well. And I won't go into that because that's next week. But certainly for me, I work in an industry where promotion and self-promotion is more or less part and parcel of what you have to do. And, you know, personally, I really struggled with that as an alcoholic. You know, there's a certain level of, you know, of wanting to be known and wanting to be out there and wanting to everyone to sort of say that you to admire you and to value you and to, you know, give you recognition and pats on the back. And, you know, I think it'd be really tempting for me to sort of talk about all the good things I do in AA, you know, all the people I help and look at me and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, I know that's because I have I've had a, you know, good sponsorship and a structured group. I understand that that's just a slippery slope for me to get really, really unwell, you know, to get really unwell and start drifting off track because, you know, for me, my sponsor used to talk about this idea that, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is the place that I go to stay alive. Like I come here to stay alive. So imagine you go to a place to stay alive. Like let's say you can't breathe, for example, and you need a life support system to keep you breathing. I'm pretty sure that you wouldn't start mucking around with like the electronics or the circuits or the settings on it. You know, just go, I just wonder if I just play around with how this works. I'm gonna fix it. I'm gonna make it work my own way. You wouldn't do it. You'd be mad because your life depended on it. But I think, you know, the parallel doesn't always translate to AA because we play these games with the fellowship that we go into. And that might just be, you know, like little things. And I mean, I've certainly had moments where, you know, I could get more distracted about what's going on my phone and, you know, and thinking about what I'm going to say next in my share or even being tempted to go, you know what, I should, you know, if I could let more people know about myself and what I do, maybe people would, you know, really value and pat me on the back. But, you know, that's like I said, is a shortcut to get really sick. And, you know, this idea of keeping ourselves anonymous at a public level, you know, it is like a really important part of the traditions. And I think it's got an interesting parallel personally with the idea of step 11 as well, you know, like step 11 and tradition 11, I don't know, I'm not an expert, it's just my opinion, but I think there's a link there because in the step 11 prayer, there's a part of it, and I might just read it out now. It's pretty interesting. It says, Lord, may I grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, and it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. And I think this idea, this whole process of letting go of the self is such a really important part of AA. And, you know, it reminds us, this tradition reminds us that this is something that we need to take seriously in at a public level, you know, that we need to forget about like putting ourselves first and just trying to remember how could I go out there and help others? How could I be of service to others? And that can be really challenging for, you know, human beings because, you know, I've got lots of other things going on in my life and I drift, you know, I drift backwards and forwards, you know, in lots of different ways, whether it's like my money or, you know, what people think of me and wanting to be liked or, you know, my family, all this stuff, you know, it can really distract me from what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, I've been given a second chance of life to pass this on. You know, this second chance comes with a caveat, you know, so I can keep this gold if I keep, you know, keep mining it to give it away. And I find that when I do this stuff, when I do this work and when I'm really involved in trying to carry the message, talking to other alcoholics and getting involved, there's everything else in my life just goes okay. It really does. it's funny in the tradition itself, in the 12 by 12, you know, if you read about it, it's really interesting because it says by temperament, nearly every one of us had been an irrepressible promoter. You know, that's so true of me. Like I came in here such a like a feeling of being such a big shot that it was never really, you know, a big shot with a chip on my shoulder and not being really recognized for, can't you see how brilliant I am? You know, and I come into AA and they want to try to make me right size. And this idea of being right size and not being a big shot, this promoter, it terrified me a bit, you know, like it really scared me because I thought that if I became right sized, that if my ego was deflated, that there'd be nothing left of me. You know, what would I have to look forward to if I didn't have all these ambitions and desires and goals? And then in the tradition, the 12 by 12, it goes on to say, they said, the prospect of a society composed almost entirely of promoters was frightening. Wow. I mean, that was written in the 1950s. Look at the world we live in today, you know, like the world entirely of promoters. I mean, you go anywhere on any app on your phone, that's what it is. Like, get out there. Put yourself, tell yourself, take a photo of your lunch. And I know, I shouldn't comment on anything outside, but that's very tempting especially for a person like me, an alcoholic. It's like, how can I let the rest of the world know how good I am? And personally, for me to grow, I need this process of self-forgetting. I need to think of others more than I think of myself, because I know that's when I get sick. You know, this is what it's like to be alcoholic. That is alcoholism. You know, this bondage of self. You know, if I just had a drinking problem, I'd stop drinking and everything would be good. Be all fine, you know, I'd be all right. But I don't have a drinking problem. I have alcoholism. And this alcoholism is profoundly damaging, especially when I stop drinking, because I don't have anything to treat this bondage of self, this me, egocentric way of living. And what they found in Alcoholics Anonymous was this pathway out, the way out. And the way out is to do the 12 steps, put those into your life, and then to start living through traditions. And these traditions I fell into just almost automatically because I had a structured group and a sponsor, and I went to the area and I did all this stuff. But what I've really come to find is that this stuff applies to my life. Bill Wilson wrote to Carl Jung, who had an influence on Roland Hazard, who passed this message on to Ebbie Thatcher, and Ebbie Thatcher passed this on to Bill Wilson. And he said that what he thought alcoholism was on a profound level, a very deep level, a thirst for union with God. You know, this part of us that feels, you know, like there's something missing from us, a hole in our soul that we need to be filled, and that we either fill it with alcohol or we fill it with spirit. You know, the spirit of this fellowship. And, you know, without that protection of the spirit of the fellowship or God, you know, Jung writes that, you know, a human can be led into perdition, you know, into the, you know, to hell, like into this pain and suffering. And, you know, for me, that is what happens when I start thinking about myself, me first. And that's at the heart of this tradition. It's just like the anonymity that comes at a public level is about humility, this sense of humility and self-forgetting. And when I do that, everything just seems to go better. I want to finish with this, and I think this is just my own personal experience. I talk about it from my point of view. I work with a lot of performers, and when a performer is thinking about themselves, they become self-conscious and they're not very good at what they do. And what I realize is that the true act of my work, and this is me applying tradition 11 into my work, is that if I become a servant of the story that we are trying to tell, if I try and serve the director's vision, or if I try to serve the playwright's vision, then I can't go wrong. You know, I'm not the boss. I'm not the big shot. I'm not the center of attention. I'm just part of something bigger. And when I do that, I'm less likely to be awkward, uncomfortable, stuck in my own skin, and I'm less likely to get into collisions and conflict with the people around me if I just take a humble and almost like spiritually anonymous version of myself. And the other part of this tradition which applies to my work is this idea of attraction rather than promotion. You know, I can go out there and tell everyone that I'm great and into the real world. But, you know, I tend to try and let my work speak for itself. And I admire the people that do that. You know, they're the people that attract me, the shameless self-promoters. I don't know. I don't kind of get it. It doesn't quite click with me. And I really like, you know, humble people and people that, you know, are really good at what they do, but let their work speak for themselves. And I think, you know, from my experience, that has more longevity, it has greater resilience, and it's a better way to do things, just in my opinion. So I'm a grateful alcoholic to be asked to share again on the traditions. It's really special that the area organized this, so I just want to thank you, Bob, Amanda, and everyone on the organizing committee that's done this, and thank Rob and everyone here tonight for listening. That's it for me. Thank you.
Well done. Thank you, Sean. That was terrific. And both of you, fantastic. So we might finish with the serenity prayer. I'll do the serenity prayer for you. God, grant me the serenity to accept
the things I cannot change.
Courage to change the things I can.
And the wisdom
to know the difference. Thanks very much, everyone.